Parishaya Pratibodhi Tam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puranamuna Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Ritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashadashadhyayinim Ambalatvam Anasantatami Bhagavad Gita Parakveshini. Okay, chapter 8. We're beginning. Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna Uvacha. Kintad Brahma Kimad. Kimadhyatmam, kintad brahma kimadhyatmam, kim karma purushottama,
kim karma purushottamam,
adibhutam cha kim proktam,
adibhutam cha kim proktam,
adidaivam kim uchate,
adidaivam kim uchate,
adiyajnyakatam kotra, adiyajnyakatam kotra, Dehesmin Madhusudana,
Dehesmin Madhusudana,
Prayana Kale Chakatam,
Prayana Kale Chakatam,
Nyeyosi Niyatatma Bihi,
Nyeyosi Niyatatma Bihi.
Often the beginning of a chapter we'll be responding to the last verse or two of the previous chapter. And here in the previous chapter, the last two verses, Krishna introduced some new words that Arjuna didn't understand, and so what he meant by those words. And so in these two verses, he's asking what he meant. So if you remember in verse 29, I'll just briefly go through it. Tila marana mokshaya mama shritya yatantiye te brahma tidhidu krishnam adhyatmam karma chakilam. So here he says, for the liberation from jada and marana, birth and death, for liberation from birth and death, mam ashritya, having taken refuge in me, yatantiye, those who strive for that liberation, having taken refuge in me, they know that Brahman completely. So there's the first word, Brahman. Those people who are striving, making the proper efforts for moksha from old age and death, and who have taken refuge in me, they, tadviduhu, they know that Brahman completely. So Brahman, what is Brahman? Then adhyatmam, that Brahman which is adhyatmam, centered on the self, so adhyatmam's next word. And they know karma akilam, karma, and they understand karma in its entirety. So there's the next word. So we've got Brahman, then adhyatmam, and then karma. So Arjuna's thinking, what do you mean by Brahman here? What do you mean by adhyatmam? What do you mean by akila karma, all of the karma? Then he says, then Krishna goes on, sadi bhutadi daivam mam sadi yajnyam cha ye viduhu prayana kale picha mam te vidur yukta chetasaha. Then Krishna says, sadi bhuta adidaivam. So here's two words. What do you mean by adibhuta? What do you mean by adidaiva? What do these words mean? And then he says, sadi yajnyam. What do you mean by adi yajnyam? Because he says, ye viduhu, those who know me, along with the adibhuta, as adidaiva, and as adi yajnya. And before, in the previous, he says, as adhyatmam. What do all of these words mean? Arjuna is kind of left with a blank. So he says, those who know me in this way. Then he says, prayana kale pi, cha mam te viduhu, they know me even at the time of death. When one dies, still that knowledge is there for them. He says, for who? The yukta chetasaha, for those people whose mind is totally focused on, is totally resolved in myself, whose knowledge is clear, who has that nischa jnanam. So for those people, he says samadhi samahi to chittam, the mind that mind that is centered and resolved in me. So those people, even at the time of death, they know me. That's how Krishna ends this chapter 7. Of course, for Krishna, there weren't any chapters. When we break it into the chapters, it's like this. So Krishna says this, and then right away, then Arjuna says, you know, oh, what? He says, hey, Purushottama. He addresses Krishna, and we'll see what that means in a minute, but hey, Purushottama, you who are the Purusha, who are the most, for whom there is nothing greater. There is no greater Purusha than you. There is no greater being than you. You're Uttama. So he addresses Krishna as Ishwara, really. Then he says, what is Brahman? Kim Ted Brahma? What is that Brahman that you're talking about?
Did you give a Sindhi?
No. Kim tet brahma, kim adhyatmam, kim karma, purusha uttama, adibhutam cha, kim proktam, adidaivam, kim uchate, adiyagnyaha katam, kaha atra, dehe, asmin, madhusudana, priyana kale cha katam, nyeha asi, niyata atma bihi. So what is that Brahman? Why he says that? Brahman has so many different meanings. Brahman can mean, it can be a word that's used for the Vedas. It can mean, it can be used as Brahmaji. You know, it can be used as that which is huge. And if they use as Brahman, it has different meanings. So how are you using Brahman? What does the word Brahman mean? What is that Brahman? Kim said Brahman. Kim adhyatmam, what do you mean by adhyatmam, centered on the atma? What is the atma? What is centered on the atma? Kim adhyatmam. Kim karma, what do you mean by karma? What is karma here? It says, adibhutam cha proktam. He says, and the adibhutam, what is the adibhutam? Centered on that which is, on that which has come into being, adibhutam. What is meant by that? And adidaivam kim uchate. And what is said by adidaivam? I'm not answering this because Krishna is going to answer it. but Arjuna is asking, you know, what are these terms that you've used? What do you mean by this? And then he goes, then adiyagnyaha katam ka atradehe. He says, who and how is there someone centered on yajna, on ritual, here in this body? Dehe means in the body, here in the body. Who is centered on the yajna? The yajna is the ritual that is being performed. Who is that ritual centered on? He says, adi yajna katam kaha hu, katam how and kaha hu, here atra dehe asin, in this body, he Madhusudana. Who and how is there an adiyagna, somebody centered on the ritual? And then he says, priyana, because Krishna used these terms. Then he says, priyana kale cha. And at the priyana kale, at the time of death, and the pranas are going with it, you know, at the time that we exit. So at the time of death, he says, how at the time of death, nyeha asi, are you known? How can you be known at the time of death, niyatatma bihi, by those whose mind is firm, under one's control? I mean, so those who have nischa jnanam, have clear knowledge, where the mind is resolved in that knowledge. So by those people, how, in what way are you known at the time of death? You know, so that's a big question. So these are Arjuna's questions. And now in the next four verses, and then for the rest of the chapter, but specifically in the next four verses, then Bhagavan answers them, these questions. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Aksharam Brahma Paramam Aksharam Brahma Paramam Svabhavo Jatma Muchyate
Svabhavo Jatma Muchyate
Bhuta Bhavo Bhavakaraha Bhuta Bhavo Bhavakaraha Visarga Karma Sagnitaha Visarga Karma Sagnitaha Aksharam Brahma Paramam Svabhavaha Adhyatmam Uchyate Bhuta Bhava Udbhava Karaha Visargaha Karma Sanyitaha. For Brahman, he says, Aksharam Brahma Paramam. For Aksharam, Naksharati iti Aksharam, means that which doesn't, that which cannot be destroyed, that which doesn't decline, that which is indestructible. So, Brahman is Aksharam. Sometimes the Shankara talks about this in his Bhasha. Sometimes the word Aksharam, even in the Gita, is used for the letter Om. Om is the Akshara. Another word for Om is Pranava, but sometimes the word Aksharam is used for Om. So Shankara brings out, could he be meaning by Aksharam Om here? You know, just as a kind of a, just for a point of clarification. And he says, no, it can't be, we're not talking about a name for Brahman here. We're talking about what is Brahman. Right, not what is Brahman's name. Om is Brahman's name for Brahman. Om is the name for Brahman. And so he says, Aksharam here means that which can't be destroyed, that which can't decline. So Brahman, that which is not subject to decline, is subject to destruction, that Aksharam is Brahman. And that Brahman is Paramam. Paraman means the Paramatma, means that which can't be, that which is supreme. Okay? But now, so here, when they say Brahman is Aksharam, in the Bhasha and in Swamiji's commentary, he brings in everything in the creation, all beings that are born in the creation, are subject to what we call the Shuddh Bhava Vikaras. Vikara means modification, right? There's six modifications of bhavas, anything that has existence. A bhava is anything that is, anything that comes into being, right? Anything that is born. And so these Shuddh Bhava Vikaras, a lot of times in Swamiji's teaching, he'll just rattle them off because they're important to understand. And here, in reference to Brahman, they're important to understand because Brahman has none of them. Okay? The first Shuddh Bhava Vikara is asti. Something comes into being. Like, for instance, when something is to be born, first there's impregnated, it's there in the womb, now it exists. Asti, it is. Then jayate, this thing now is born. So asti, jayate, it's born. Then vardhate, this bhava, this thing, vardhate, this being, will increase, it will grow. So asti, jayate, vardhate. Then aparinamate, it transforms, it changes, it goes through puberty, it modifies as it grows. Now it goes, we usually mean it for something like puberty, going through that transformation. Right? Then apakshiyate, it starts to decay. Right? So first it is, it grows, it transforms, and then it begins to decay, and then vinashyati, it dies. These are the six bhava and existent things, something that's come into being.
What was the last one? Dimension K?
Vinashyati. So these, all beings are subject to this process, right? Akshara, something which is akshara, is not subject to this process. So Brahman is Aksharam. It's not subject to change, subject to any type of decay, subject to any kind of destruction. So Brahman is free from these Shuddh Bhava Vikaras. In fact, it says that Brahman is paramam means there is nothing greater than that. Right? There's nothing beyond that. There's nothing greater than that. And it itself is something, once you say paramam, it's something that being not subject to decay, not subject to change, it's also not subject to time. It's not subject to objectification. It's not subject to limitation. Right? Because anything that exists in time is subject to modification. And also being existing in time, it's existing in space. Or if something exists in time, it exists in space. If it exists in space, then it can be differentiated from one thing from another. And so this whole thing that we call desha, kala, just to give you some terms, because these terms we use all the time, desha, kala, vastu, paricchedaha. Any object in the world is limited by desha, space, kala, time, vastu, objectification, like this is a vastu, this is a thing, this, because this is a thing, this is one thing, it's different than this thing. This thing is different from this thing. So a vastu means an object. This world can be divided up into many objects, into nama-rupas. Right? One nama-rupa is different, name and form is different from another name and form. That's what we mean by vastu. And so the whole universe, the whole maya upadhi, is limited or differentiated. Paricheda means to put limitations around something. So paricheda is that all that we experience is limited by desha, by space. It's not everything. As long as it's not everything, there's something that it's not, it's limited by space. Kala, it's limited by time because it's subject to change. Very simple. Vastu, it's one thing, not another. Right? Those are all parichedas. Brahman has no paricheda. It's not limited by space. It's not limited by time. It's not limited by vastu. Right? Mm-hmm. In fact, it's the very self, it's the very self of time. It's the very self of space. It's the self, the being of every vastu. Right? If the Atma is the being of every vastu, of every object, of everything that is, then it can't be limited by any one of them. It's just like you can say, you know, if we use the example of the wave ocean, one wave is limited by the next wave, because it's not the next wave, right? And every wave is bound by time, though it takes up a certain amount of space, and also every wave is different from every other wave. That's desha kala vastu paricchedaha. Water, in reference to that example, is desha kala vastu aparicchedaha. The means unlimited, right? So water is not limited by any wave because it's the self of every wave. It's not limited by time because time takes place within it. Itself is subject to time. The wave is subject to time. The water is not subject to time. In light of that example, right? One way, it's not limited by space because there's nothing there but water. And so you can't get outside of the water. Like this, you can't get outside of the self. So you can't get outside of the self. And so there's no limitation of space. Right? There's nothing outside of it. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing in within it that it is not. And so we say the Atma is, the Brahman is desha kala vastu aparichedaha. It means there's nothing at all what limits it. It in fact is the self of all that is. See that? So when we say Brahman is aksharaha, all of these things come in. These two, especially these two things being, you know, the shed bhava vikaras, being that which is free of those, of all the shed bhava vikaras, these modifications that belong to a beings within the creation. Brahman is free of that. It's akshara. It's not subject to any type of change. Right? And then by nature, because it's not, once you say it's not subject to change, it no longer can be an object within the creation. If it's not an object, Brahman is not an object within the creation, then it can't be limited by Desha Kala Vastu. So it's Desha Kala Vastu Aparichedaha. And so then he says, so that's what I mean by Brahman. It's Akshara and it is Paramam. There is nothing more than that. There's nothing greater than that. There's nothing beyond that. Right? Paramam means that for which there is nothing greater. So that that Brahman is that which is Aksharam. It's free of any type of death or decay, and it's Paramam. There is nothing more than that. There's nothing greater than that. So Aksharam Brahma Paramam, and its Swabhava, the nature of Brahman, the being of Brahman, its Swabhava is Adhyatmam Uchate, is said to be Adhyatmam. Adhyatmam means it is centered on the self. Now, what they mean by that is, by saying centered on the self, Adhyatma, Adhyatma, we can mean by the self being centered on this physical body, or you can mean centered on the sense organs, or centered on the mind, or centered on the whole, what we call Karya Karana Sangata, means the body-mind complex. Or you can mean, as we go inward, because he wants to know where Krishna is talking about the jnani, the one who has knowledge. So for the jnani, as we look at the jiva, so adhyatmam here means jiva. Now by jiva you mean the karya karana sangata, this body mind sense complex, or you can mean all of the koshas. What do you mean by that, the jiva? Do you mean the 19 components, or you mean the self of the jiva? So here, the adhyatma means the pratyagatma. So there's a Mahavakya here. Mm-hmm. That Brahman, which is Aksharam, which the Brahman which is free from any type of change, that which is Paramam, means there's nothing more than that, nothing greater than that. That Brahman is the pratyagatma, which is the self of the jiva. So by adhyatmam, I mean this Brahman, the Swabhava, the very being of Brahman, is yourself. You know, when you say, I am, I exist, and we break through the, what we call anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition where I take myself, my being, to be this body, mind, sense organs, and I become a limited being. When through jnana, through knowledge, I recognize that in fact this atma, this self that I am, is the satyam, it's the truth of the body, it's the self of the body, it's the self of the mind, it's the self of the sense organs, but it itself is free of all of that. The body's totally dependent on me for its being. Mind is totally dependent on me. Sense organs are totally dependent on me for their being. I am their truth, in fact. I am their self. But I'm not dependent on them at all. The Atma is not something that you can objectify, that you can look at as an object. Yourself is the bottom line. Yourself is the one because of which all things are known. It itself can't become an object of knowledge because it is consciousness. It is, you are the consciousness because of which everything is illumined. You yourself can't become a luminary, illumined by, you can't become something which is illumined by something else because you are the luminary. You are the consciousness. So if you are the consciousness, there can't be a consciousness behind you to illumine the consciousness, because what's dividing the consciousness from the consciousness? It's an infinite regress with nothing in between. You can't have consciousness illumining consciousness and have something in between the two. We can have the sensation of consciousness illumining consciousness, because I am aware that I am conscious. But that's because consciousness is consciousness. You know? Because consciousness is consciousness, it's self-luminous. It's self-evident. It doesn't require another consciousness to come in and light it up. And so that self-evident consciousness, which I am, that's the pratyagatma, right? When I go to understand who is this I, who am I really, I have to go through this process, this strict drishya viveka, the seer seeing differentiation, you know, to differentiate my being from everything that I can objectify that in fact exists within this desha kala, within time, space, which is a material, which is an object to be differentiated from other objects, which in fact is inert, it's subject to transformation, it's subject to change, it's subject to decay, all of these things that I've identified myself with, these are all things that I can look at. These are all things that I can objectify. They're not conscious in their own right. Right? In fact, the body, when it dies, and the sukshma sharira, when the subtle body leaves it, it's just a bag of food. That's going to decay. You know, it's going to decay into its five elements. That's what it is. The mind is something that is in continual flux. It's continually changing. It can't be you because every moment it's gone. And if you can't grab onto it to say that it's me, it's an instant you try to get grab onto it, it's already gone and something else has come. And so the mind and the sense organs and the perceptions and the moods and the emotions and everything that forms this body-mind complex that we call this karya karana sangata, all of it is something that has me for its truth. None of it's away from consciousness. None of it's separate from me. Right? In fact, if I were to take the conscious being away from it, what would it be? Nothing. And so it depends on me for its being, but I don't depend on it in any way. Because I can't be objectified. I'm not an object in the creation. I'm the self-evident being, because of which this whole thing is known. That's the pratyagatma, and that pratyagatma is Brahman. So here, that Brahman which is aksharam, which is free from any type of modification, that is the adhyatman. Right? That Brahman is the adhyatman. It is my Brahman. So Krishna says the swabhava, the very nature of Brahman, the very being of Brahman, is the adhyatma, is centered on the self, centered on the pratyagatma. Which means for the jnani, I recognize that Brahman, which is the limitless being, limitless being because of which this creation exists, the limitless being because of which this creation exists, is my being, is the pratyagatma. So that's what I mean, he says, by adhyatman. And for karma now, because Arjuna has asked, what is karma? He says, bhuta bhava udbhava karaha visargaha karma sagnitaha. This term, what's meant by karma, what is the sanya is the term. So what is designated as karma, what is meant by karma here, is visargaha. Visargaha means any offering. When you do a ritual, like a Vedic ritual, the havis, all of the different offerings are offered into the fire, right? Into Agni. And then Agni takes those offerings up to the devatas. And then the devatas, pleased by these offerings, bring the rains. The sun shines, the seasons go in an orderly fashion, and the rains come. That's karma in terms of ritual. And because of that, because of the orderly matter in which the creation continues, in which the creation goes, beings are allowed to be born. Get this just one. The beings are born. Beings are born. Mm-hmm. So because of karma, in chapter 3 he goes into this and says several verses on this. But this is just one level. Because of karma, because of the rituals, these offerings, you know, because of the dharma, you know, the creation, the devatas bless this creation, and it goes in an orderly fashion. They bring the rains, they go through the seasons, etc. They allow the, you know, the food to grow, etc. So it's that visarga, those offerings, that karma, which brings about the udbhava, the birth of the existent thing, the existent beings here that have been born. They're responsible for the birth of beings. Okay, that's one level. And Shankara mentions that level referring back to chapter 3 of the Gita. Another way to understand it, Swamiji talks about in here also, is that what has caused you to take this birth? Why have you taken this birth? You say it's because of your karma. It's beginningless karma, in fact. But karma, when we use the word karma, just as action, that's the wider scope of the word karma, it means your actions which produce karmapala. Your karma produces karmapala, the fruit of your actions. The karmapala that an action produces is in two forms, drishta and adrishta. Drishta means the immediate result, the immediate physical result of the karma. If I walk across the room, what's the result? I get to the other side of the room. Okay. So the immediate physical result on this plane of reality is called drishta. The result that is, drishta means is seen. The result that is seen. Adrishta means the unseen. So any karma will give a seen result and an adrishta, unseen, subtle result. The subtle result is called punyan papa. Adrishta is punyan papa. Punyan papa and the adrishta goes into the sanchitta karma. Remember there's three kinds of karma. The sanchitta karma, prarabdha karma, the agami karma. The prarabdha karma is what you're responsible for this birth right now. The prarabdha karma means that which is already fructifying. That prarabdha karma comes out of the sanchitta karma. What is the sanchitta karma? Punyan papa. It's the karma pala, the subtle, the adrishta, the subtle results of your actions that have yet to fructify. That's the sanchitta. That sanchitta karma will fructify in the prarabdha, in the form of prarabdha karma. Right? And so what does that mean is that karma, your karmas are causing, are bringing about adrishta, the adrishta pala in the form of punyan papa, which causes your next birth. So all of these living beings that are here, all beings that are here, that are existing, have taken this birth because of karma. Because of really the fructification of karma in the form of punyan papa, which is now taking this birth as the prarabdha karma. So that's one level that's talked about. So he says, by karma, he says, I mean that which is offered, anything that is offered, anything that is done. So if we say that which is offered, and you're looking at the rituals, then you're evoking the devatas to keep this world running properly. The devatas represent the order, Ishwar's order, you know? And so the whole, much of chapter 3 is talking about the necessity of the jiva to the dharma of the jiva is to appreciate Ishwara. Ishwara gives so much, the order gives so much. What do you give back? Do you just take like a thief? They talk about in chapter 3. You just, you know, take everything like a thief without giving anything back. That's a dharma. And so there's certain duties that you have. You know, certain duties that you have to Bhagavan, duties you have to the gods to recognize what you've been given and to give back in a prayerful way. And so if you don't do that, you're likened to kind of a thief, you know, hit and run type of a person. And so that will, Swami said, I remember him saying this one, you know, if a few people do that, it's not that noticeable. The others will make up, the others who are living a dharmic life will make up for it. Right? But if too many people are doing it, then the dharmis won't be able to overwhelm, you know. You see, the example is, like, say there's a choir. It is a huge choir, you know. And, you know, 90% of the people in the choir sing on tune. And these other ones, you know, are overwhelmed, you know. And so it's not really noticeable. Their voice just kind of blends in with the overwhelming 90%. But, you know, as it gets to 80%, and 70%, and then 60%, and 40%, it becomes kind of like a cacophony, you know. It's no longer something that we can survive the sound of it. In fact, when the Adharma becomes too much, the Dharmis can't hold the order.
Mm-hmm.
The Dharmis can no longer hold the order. And it gets to a certain percentage are like that. At that time we need an avatara, in fact. That's what Krishna says. When the Dharmis can't, are totally overpowered by Adharma, at that time I need to come and straighten things out to bring back the order.
Mm-hmm.
And so here these things are all somewhat interrelated. And so when we think of karma as visargaha, it's those offerings to the devatas, in a sense, through the rituals, the offerings to the devatas through the rituals that hold the order. And on the bigger scope, it's punya, you know. I mean, if we take it in a wider meaning of just karma, in terms of drishta and adrishta, you know, it's my karmas that cause one to be born. But understanding the human responsibility, the human participation in the order is also an important meditation. So you might review that chapter too. It's really, really beautiful. It makes you much more appreciative of the relationship of the part to the whole. And it's Dharma, chapter 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, chapter 3. Mm-hmm. Very, very nice thing. So when he's bringing that out here, he's talking about that. He says this visarga, these karmas that bring about the birth of bhava. Bhava are things that exist. All these things that exist are bhavas. All these things that have come to being. The existence, you know, the bringing into existence of all of these things.
What do you mean by bhava?
Bhava is something which has come into being, that exists. Just exists as something within the universe. These are all bhavas. Yeah. These bhavas have been born. These bhavas have come into being. Right? What has allowed them to be born is this visarga, the offerings of these karmas. So then he goes, adibhutam kshara bhavaha, adibhutam kshara bhavaha, purushas chadidhaivatam, purushas chadidhaivatam, adiyagnyo hame vatra, adiyagnyo hame vatra, dehe deha pratambara, dehe deha pratambara, adibhutam kshara bhavaha, purushaha cha adidaivatam adiyagnaha ahameva asya dehe dehabhutam vara. He says, what do I mean by adibhutam? Krishna says, kshadaha bhavaha, all those things, this is adibhuta, this virat. Virat means the physical universe, which is Ishwara. The name of Ishwara in terms of the physical universe we call Virat. This physical universe, everything in it is perishable. It's kshara. Brahman is akshara. All of this physical universe, all things in it are perishable. They are subject to death and decay. He says that's adibhutam. Adibhutam are all of these things that are akshara, that are kshara, perishable. All the bhavas, all these things that exist, that are subject to death and decay. I am that. I am that too. There's nothing away from me, because all of the mithya, everything within this creation, I am that, right? So adibhutam is all of this, everything that exists, that itself is subject to change, subject to death. Purushascha adidaivatam, and what do we mean by adidaiva? Purushaha means Hiranyagarbha, means this physical universe, I am. The one who has what we call the abhimana, the sense of me in the physical universe. I can say this whole universe is me, this is myself. Like, if for instance, if you have the imagination of a meadow, I ask you to imagine a meadow, you can say with experiential validity that I am the grass, I am the sun, I am the trees, I am the changing seasons, I am all of the things in that meadow. I am the things in the meadow. Okay? That's the adibhutam. And that's my experience. That all of this is me. My sense of me, my sense of being pervades all of these things. None of these things have any separation from me in the meadow. Hiranyagarbha is, now we're moving in the meadow, we're moving in from the objects that are kshara. All of the objects in the meadow are subject to birth and death and change. But they're still me. Right? They're not away in that they're not, I am their self. Hiranyagarbha is, I would say, what we call the chittabhasa. It's myself as the conscious being of the meadow. I am conscious of the meadow. I am the grass and the trees and the sun and the sun and the sky and the clouds and the birds and the individuals. I am that. I am their self. But I also am the conscious being that is reflected in that. In other words, this whole meadow is known, right? So in a way that's, I've moved in from the objects themselves. Now I'm looking at myself as the one who knows the meadow. That's Hiranyagarbha. So now in reference to the whole creation, if we look at Virat, Virat is this physical universe. The one who recognizes this physical universe is me. This is Ishwara, right? That we call Virat. All of these comings and goings, all of this birth and death, all of these names and forms, I am their being. They are me. They're not away from me. As Hiranyagarbha, I am the being. I am the conscious being that is aware of this whole thing. Like, you can see it exactly if you bring an image of the meadow, you're the objects in the meadow, and you're the one who's aware of the meadow. Remember, Brahman is not aware of the meadow. Brahman is just consciousness. For Brahman to be aware of the meadow has to be there. The Maya Upadhi has to be there. But the Maya Upadhi is sometimes there, sometimes resolved. Right? Brahman itself is not a knower, it's just consciousness. It's not consciousness of something. And so to be conscious of the meadow, then that meadow, that sattva, of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, that sattva has to be there reflecting. That's chittabhasa, the reflection of consciousness. That's what we call Hiranyagarbha. That there's a maya upadhi at all, that there's maya at all, is what we call Ishwara. Brahman with this maya capacity is Ishwara. But when the maya projects, we can look at it in terms of Virat means the whole, all of the nama-rupas in the creation. That's Virat. Hiranyagarbha is the fact, is the consciousness of all of that. So if we make that distinction like that, we can make the same distinction in reference to your imagination. So he says the Purusha here is Adidaivatam. That's the Purusha. That's me as Hiranyagarbha. Jishwara speak, you know, Krishna is looking at what is the reality here of adidaivatam. The adidaiva means that which is the luminous, the luminosity. All of the devas have that sense of luminosity, but Hiranyagarbha is the one who is Ishwara, the whole. So put all the devatas together and you have Hiranyagarbha. That's Ishwara, in a sense. If you take all the whole order, right? And that daiva means the consciousness that order enjoys. That is Ishwara. So I am the Hiranyagarbha, so he says. And then he says, Adiyegnyaha aham eva astradehe. And he says, here in this body, I am the Adiyegnyaha. I am the karta, the yajamana, the one who does the ritual. Right? The adi yajna. What is the yajna, the ritual, centered on? It's centered on me. I'm the karta. There is no other karta. I am Ishwar talking. I am the karta. I am the one who does the ritual. Right? I am the action. I am the offering. I am the karmapala. I am the subject and the object. I am the knower and the known. I am the doer and the done. I am the whole thing. So the ritual itself, he says, is centered on me here in this body. Which means, Ishwar is saying, I am the karta, not you. There's only one karta here. And it's Ishwar. It is me, not you. So that's really, it's a beautiful thing. You know this, Brahmarpanam Brahmavihi Brahmagna Brahmanahutam Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina. This chant that we always do. Brahmarpanam, I am the Arpanam, I am the ladle. Brahmarpanam, I am the Havis, I am the offering, right? I am the act of giving the offering, because I am the karta of the offering, I am the one who receives the offering, I'm the pala. It goes through this whole thing, means I'm both the, I'm the subject and the object, is the idea, that I am the whole for that. So here he says, I am the adiyagna, I am the one who, the yajamana, the one who does the ritual, and here in this body. Then he says to Arjuna, hey Dehabhratam Vada, O you who are the most exalted among those who have a body. of all those who have a body, you are most exalted. You are most exalted. So now he's gone through several of these. He's answered several. He says, answered Brahman, Adhyatmam, Karma, Adibhutam, Adidaivitam, Adiyajnaha. But now, we'll do this next week, now what he has to answer is, what happens when I die, when a person dies? So those two we'll do next week.
Mm-hmm. If we're all here.
If we're here, we'll do it.
Is making up the Hiranyagama.
It's just only that it's the subtle realm. It's nothing. You don't even have to.
I don't have to
say it like that. Right, okay. It's like if you say all of the waves make up the ocean.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay.
But there's something more than just all of. It's not like you can take a bunch of waves and just throw them in a pile and you have the ocean. There's an order also, but every law, in a sense, has a devata.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you look at an example they use for that is this body, you know, is made up of so many things. You know, like the all of the organs, and then the blood vessels and the muscle tissue. Everything has, and they all enjoy that the consciousness pervades the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so all of these put together, every single one of them you can look at in a sense as a devata. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if we look at Ishvara as Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, they're all only Ishvara. But Brahmaji is just Ishvara from the standpoint of the manifestation of the creation. When the creation comes into being, that's Brahmaji. When it's being sustained, it's Vishnu. You know, that which allows it to be sustained, that's what we call Ishvara's Vishnu then. When it's resolved, you know, it's Rudra or Shiva. You know, but there's only one Ishvara. Ishvara is Brahmaji, is Vishnu, is Shiva. The different aspects. Mm-hmm. You know? And then you look at all the devatas like Ganesha.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many of them. Or we look at Varuna and Vayu, all of the different devatas. But they're all aspects. None of them are separate from Ishvara. That's why, you know, they talk about this in the good story in the Kena Upanishad where the devatas, you know, came back very victorious from a war with the Asuras, and they were so proud of themselves, you know, that Ishvara sent you know, Uma, a goddess, to come and show them a thing or two, to make them realize, you know, that the only power that they had was really Ishvara, that they didn't have any power of their own. That the power that they had was only Ishvara. And then, of course, the first gods, one god after another, Agni went, and Vayu went, and Varuna went, to try to blow out this little, to be tested by Uma. And they all came back, you know, having failed, feeling terrible about it. But then finally Indra, the lord of all the devatas, went, and he also failed. But then he asked to know what he asked for the truth, you know, of what this was all about, and then he got that understanding. Hmm. We'll do the Kena Upanishad. It's really beautiful.
Kena.
From the second chapter of the Kena.
There's that very, very beautiful rock temple in Bombay, the Elephanta.
Uh-huh.
And it has the, it's a three-headed carving of one. And he has Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma.
Mm-hmm.
That's that same like concept, right?
Yeah. So you know from the root, it is Deva. Comes from div, which means to illumine, to light up. You know, and so it's that which is enjoying consciousness. So what is that consciousness centered on? And so it's here, in terms of Ishvara, it's Hiranyagarbha. If you can analyze your own imagination, I use meadow, but it could be anything. In the imagination, there are the objects imagined, right? But then there's the fact that the objects are known. That's different. Like you're both the known objects, right? And you're the knowing of the objects. The knowing part of the objects is Hiranyagarbha.
The recognition,
the knownness of the object. So even if you're sitting there with your meadow imagination, and then all of these objects are coming and going within the imagination. They're all kshara. Kshara means they're all subject to change, all subject to death. They come and go. Right? But they're not away from you. You're their self. The whole imagination comes from you, sustained by you, goes back into you. But there's more happening there. So that's the virat. The virat is all of the names and forms that are known. The Hiranyagarbha, right, is the me, the conscious being that knows them.
Mm.
Right? because all of them are known, and you're abiding with it. It's what we call the chittabhasa, the reflection of consciousness brought about by the vritti. The vritti in this case, or the whole maya upadhi. Remember that in maya, maya is sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is the principle that reflects consciousness. Rajas is responsible for movement. It is the movement. Any type of energy movement is rajas. Tamas is namarupa, all the forms. The tamas goes through this process of panchikarana and becomes fivefold and all of that. The sattva is pervasive, rajas is pervasive, tamas is pervasive. It's not there's a little sattva over here, a little rajas over here. They're all pervasive. So now, when you have a vritti, the whole vritti is known. And not part of it. That's because sattva is pervasive. In the vritti, there are namarupa. Whatever, like say it's a vritti just in imagination, you imagine a meadow with animals, etc. Those are the rupas, those are the forms. Right? The forms are called, are caused by tamas. The activity is called by caused by rajas. Now, none of it is away from you, and on another level, none of it is you either. It's not away from you, and it's not you. So now, let's take away what is not me. First of all of them are me, but I'm not them, because I can take them away, and I still am. So I can take away, in just working with the meadow, I can take away the names and forms of the meadow. Nothing happens to me. I can take away the meadow vritti, right? I can take away all of the activities. Like if I take away the names and forms, I can take away all of the rajas also, no problem. But if I take away the vritti itself, if I can resolve the vritti, I also take away all of the sattva. If I take away the sattva, I'm taking away the knownness. Right? Because of the sattva, the vritti is known. Because of the tamas, there are names and forms that are known. Because of the rajas, there's activity. But because of the sattva, it's known. So it's the sattva that is Hiranyagarbha. The identification with the sattva that is Hiranyagarbha. So I'm just looking, making you try to differentiate it in terms of a thought so that you can understand what it is for Ishwara. With Ishwara, the whole creation is known. So the creation comes into manifestation, the whole thing is known. I'm conscious of the whole thing. That's Hiranyagarbha. All of the names and forms are called Adibhutam, right, or Virat. Those things don't have any being or any substance apart from me. They come and go and they come and go and they come and go in the sattva, which is not coming and going. So I remain conscious as long as the vritti, as long as the maya upadhi is manifest, then whatever is going on in the creation is known because the sattva is pervasive.
That way you said doesn't come and go, but when the creation
except with it goes with the creation, but the names and forms, right, there's rajas and tamas that are going on changing. Right, so rajas is the activity.
So is the contrast between sattva and versus there's something that you're trying to point out, I think, about that sattva somehow has its own position in comparison to rajas and tamas.
Mostly in comparison, well, yes, because rajas doesn't reflect consciousness.
Right.
It's the energy, really. Mm-hmm. What's responsible for movement and energy is rajas.
Mm-hmm.
Tamas is what's responsible for vastus, for objects.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But all of it, whether it's sattva, rajas, or tamas, all of it is maya.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sattva is as much maya as the rajas and the tamas. But because of the sattva, the whole is known.
Okay.
So without the sattva, it's not known.
So when you say known, I guess I get confused because it's like known to whom? I mean, that's... So.
Well, that's a good question. For if it were Ishwara, if there's no ajnanam there, it is known, not known to whom. But because I have an ahankara, I will say, I am the knower. Right? But for me to be the... How can I be the knower? Consciousness isn't knowing. So, actually, the creation is known. Even in terms of your vritti. The vritti is known. Vritti means thought, right? The thought is known. You're not performing an act of knowing it. Right? It's known because the sattva is there in the vritti, and the vritti reflects consciousness, so it is known. And you come along and say, I am a knower. When you say, I am, right? I am a knower, then what is causing you to say that? Well, in the vritti, you're identifying with what we call the chitta-bhasa, the reflection of consciousness in the vritti. Because you're a conscious being, and so this vritti is known, right, because of the sattva. And so then I say, the vritti itself, the mind itself, the ahankara says, I am the knower. Because the vritti is known, what else are you going to say? The vritti is known. It's true. It is known. Now, who are you in that? You're not... if you're a jnani, you're going to say, I am both the knower and the known. Right? I'm the subject and the object. Or I am the consciousness because of which there is the subject and the object are known. See, if you... when you say, I am the subject, say if you say, I am the knower, you have to be able to say, in fact, I am both the knower and the known. Because if you say, I am the knower, let's look at what you're referring to. You're referring to your sense organs and to your mind. Right? There's not going to be any other knower there. So, but in reality, the sense organs and the mind are known, as well as the objects. So if I pull back in terms of subject-object relationship, like, for instance, I know through my sense organs this room. So I'm the subject, I'm the knower, the room is the known. I'm the subject, this is the object. But then I realize, oh, but this body is also known through the same sense organs. And so this body has to become the object, and now the sense organs are the subject. And then I realize, oh, but the sense organs also are known by the mind. Whether they're working or not, they're also objectified. So now, the body and the sense organs join the world of the known, and I become, my mind is the subject. And I said, no, the mind is also known. Right? I'm aware of all the thoughts in the mind. So that also now joins the object, and now I'm the subject. But now who's the subject? And you say the ahankara is the subject, the ahankara also is known. You say the emotions are the subject? No, they're also known. Do you say, you know, I am the subject? Who are you referring to? And so, in fact, the subject, what is normally taken to be the subject, is as much an object as an object. Mm-hmm. So we say the subject and the object, right? I am the self of the subject and the object. I am both the knower and the known. But it becomes more clear. Like if you have a vritti, you have the meadow image, and in the meadow, you're taking a walk with friends in the meadow. And as a subject in the meadow, right, you're looking at the trees, etc. Right? As a subject in the meadow, but in fact, you are the self of the subject in the meadow as well as what the subject knows. You're the self of the knower and the known. But you yourself are free of knower and known. Now,
when you say you, I mean, is it the hunk? I mean...
the consciousness. The truth of you. You are Brahman, in fact. You're the Brahman, yourself. Right? Is the self of the jiva and the world. the jiva and the creation, jiva and jagat, right? You're the self of that. You're neither than you're the subject and the object, both, and you're free of the subject and the object. You're both the truth of the subject and the object, and you're free of the subject and the object. Because in terms of the, like, for instance, in terms of the meadow, when the meadow's there, you're the Ishwara of the meadow, and you're the jiva, you're the adhyatman, you're the adhibhutam, you know? The adhyatman means you're the conscious being of the jiva. You're adhibhutam. You are all of the names and forms that make up the meadow. You're the adhidaivam. You're the consciousness which illumines the meadow, the hiranyagarbha, right? And you're also totally free of the meadow. If you withdraw the meadow, you're still fine. But you're not, your consciousness is not dependent upon being conscious of anything. Consciousness is just consciousness. That's the me. Yourself is not performing an act of illumining anything. It's just self. It is luminosity. That's its nature. And so when the Maya projects, you know, it is known that it reflects, the Maya itself, the sattva reflects that consciousness. So the sattva allows it to be known. Make sense?
I mean, I'm sort of thinking of it like a dream.
Good. Think of it like a dream. Like a lucid dream. That's a good example. You use lucid dream as the best, better than even dream.
Okay.
It's like a dream.
Yeah. So sattva falls out of the subject and object perception, because sattva itself is the knowing of...
You know, from the sattva of Hiranyagarbha, where there's not, associated with tamas. Like the subtle body is identified with tamas, with this physical body, and so it's limited by that. But for Hiranyagarbha, there's no such limitation. Like that's, again, think of the dream or the meadow. For Hiranyagarbha, you're the Ishwara of the meadow. The sattva, there's no identification with tamas, with any name and form within the meadow. You are the whole. But for a jiva within the meadow, there's sattva, that the antakarana, the mind is sattva. The mind and sense organs are sattva. But that sattva is identified with, associated with tamas, with the body. And so you have a limit. You have a limitation there. Even though you get to imagine, you get to be a little Ishwara. You know, limited. You have a limited Ishwara twam. Like when you, like the use of your imagination, you have to see what it's like to be Ishwara in a little limited way.
And how does the knownness of Brahman differ from the knownness of Hiranyagarbha? Is there a...
Only in this way, the knownness is Brahman.
Yes.
But the names and forms are known. Right? Because the Maya Upadhi projects, there is sattva pervasive to the Maya Upadhi, that reflects consciousness, and so this, the Maya Upadhi is known.
So is it like, I mean, if I have a dream and I say populated with people,
yeah,
and initially I just have the dream, so that's sattva, and then I can sometimes like take up a character in that dream?
Well, initially when you don't have a character, then you're just the Hiranyagarbha, Ishwara.
Right.
You know, and so the whole thing is known. The whole thing is known because sattva is pervasive. So the whole thing is naturally known. Now you take up a character, and then you enjoy limited the sattva that's identified
that
with the physical. Yeah, because identified with this physical body and limited to the physical body. It's a limited sattva. It's the same sattva, but it's a limited sattva. I mean, sattva is sattva. It reflects, right? That it reflects consciousness. But if it's sattva that's identified with the body, then it's limited by the body. your sukshma sharira is limited and my sukshma sharira is limited, they're not the same, but both reflect consciousness by their nature. Sattva by its nature reflects consciousness. It can't not reflect consciousness. That's what it is.
Could you say that Brahma is like unlimited sattva? No.
Because Brahman is the consciousness which is reflected as though. Brahman is that. It doesn't require... Sattva is part of the Maya Upadhi, and so something is being reflected. You know, whatever... whatever name and form is there, because rajas and tamas are also there.
For this illustration, if, you know, we say knower known knowledge or knower known knowing, for this illustration it's like then you could have knownness. Knownness
is
knowing, known knower.
Yeah, I know. I like to use it that way. Everybody seems to get upset, but I'm glad you've done
it.
Knownness.
Yeah.
The knownness that everything enjoys, if you take get rid of a whole creation,
yes.
That is left.
Yeah.
That's Brahman.
Okay.
It is that sense of known is that it's a completed state.
Mm-hmm.
Known, it is known. Get rid of all the names and forms, what is left, known.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of the whole creation. That self, what known is a synonym for self-evident. You know, it's self-evident, it's self-luminous, it's self-evident. It is by its, just by its nature, it is known. There's no knower. There's no knower known, just known.
So you take yourself to be that sense of knownness, that is...
You take yourself to be the knower.
Yeah.
And that the known. But actually, that's why, you know, sometimes I go, you know, like the wall is known, the space is known, the body is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known, the ahankar is known, the self is known. There's nobody behind the self to know it. Known is the reality. That is consciousness.
Mm.
So what's upsetting about using that word? Where's the difficulty in that?
Just people have had difficulty for some reason. But if you don't, that's good. Then
I don't
like
want to have one.
So you could also say that knowing is rajas. The known, the knowing is rajas. The knower is the nama and rupa, right, which is tamas, and then the knowing is sattva.
I don't know about that. Only in the sense that only the reason you're saying that is because knowing seems to be an activity,
yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
Why you're saying that.
Rajas.
Yeah. But
and the knower is like the form that you could say. Anyway.
Well, actually, no. What you're getting at there is that there's just a total superimposition.
Yeah.
There's a total superimposition. Like once you say knower, knowership also is identified with your body and your mind
yeah.
And sense organs,
yeah,
right? So
right.
This is what this anyanya jhasa becomes very complex, where everything is superimposed upon everything else. That's the problem. And that's what has to be sorted out. That's what we mean by that viveka, like drisha viveka. We have to different, viveka means that differentiation between the drik and the drisha, the seer and the seen. That's the major teaching methodology. Because until you differentiate consciousness from all of the things that's been superimposed upon, you don't have a clue what's being talked about in terms of the Atma being Brahman. You have to recognize the Atma first to recognize that as Brahman. How can you recognize the self as Brahman if you haven't recognized the self? You can go the other way around, but this is the easiest.
No, the Atma and Brahma, what's the difference there actually?
When we get to the Atman by going through the jiva, the body, the mind, the sense organs to yourself, but you still recognize, oh, I am this conscious being, but now you have to see that consciousness that you are is the consciousness which is the self of the universe. So Atma is Brahman, but originally you take Atma to be the Jiva, to be an individual.
I see.
Right? And so the recognition is this, oh, myself is not a Jiva, it is Brahman. It is limitless.
Oh, it's a false identification with the Jiva instead of with Brahman.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So even when you say the Mahavakya Tattvamasi, that thou art, it's the recognition that this self is Brahman. But the self of the Jiva is the self of Ishwara. Not like Ishwara, is. So in the end, the knowledge is you are Ishwara. It's because Ishwara is mithya. Ishwara, the Maya Upadhi, is totally dependent on Brahman, and you are Brahman. So if you can say you are Brahman, you have to be able to say you are Ishwara from the standpoint of the self. The Jiva is not Ishwara, the Jiva is part of Ishwara. The body-mind complex, you know. That's like wave ocean, but you are the water. Just like if you have an imagination of the meadow, you are the Ishwara, you're the self of the meadow, and you're the self of the Jivas in the meadow. You're the self of the whole thing. In fact, the Jivas in the meadow are part and parcel of the meadow projection. They're not separate from it. It's all one story, and there's one self, one story. One self, one manifestation.
So the birth of the story is also the birth of Hiranyagarbha, right?
Yeah, in a sense, it's the remember that whether it's Hiranyagarbha is only Brahman, right? It's only Brahman, but with the Maya Upadhi, the creation is known. The creation becomes known. You know, so it becomes my limitless, that what we call the abhimana, myself. Myself is, this whole creation is known completely by me. I'm not identified, I'm not knowing from within it. I know the whole. Just like if I have an imagination of a meadow, I don't know the meadow from within the meadow. I know because the whole meadow manifestation is not separate from me. I reflect the whole thing. That's Hiranyagarbha. So you can say Hiranyagarbha comes and goes as long as you don't think it's a separate being from Ishwara or from Brahman. Like for instance, if you imagine a meadow right now, you don't feel that you've come into being. Right. Mm-hmm. You haven't come into being. It's just that this meadow has come into being and it is known. You don't have a sense that I have come into being because the meadow is known.
Mm-hmm.
You see the difference?
And so that kind of...
You're not creating Hiranyagarbha.
Right, right. And so that sense of knowing of the meadow is Hiranyagarbha.
Yeah. Just the fact that the meadow is known is Hiranyagarbha. But also, you are all the objects in the meadow. That's Virat. See, there's two things happening there. Like, for instance, the tree is known, and the tree is a tree. There's the object there, tree, right, which is me, and the tree is known. The tree is. There's the name and form there. And it is known that the tree is Virat, that, and that is me, and the tree is known, that's Hiranyagarbha.
But there's no way the tree could be there without it being known, right, at least
that's
in a
right.
dream.
That's right. There's no way any of this creation can be there without it being known from the standpoint of Ishwara,
mm-hmm.
not from the standpoint of view of the
right.
Jiva. Yeah, because such chit. And here and Sattva is pervasive. That's why Ishwara is Sarvajnaha and Sarvavit. Sarvajnaha means that general knowledge, which you can also have, that the jiva can also be have sarvajñatvam when we use the two terms. Sarvajñatvam means I recognize myself as the satchit of all that is. Sarvabhit is the specific knowledge. So Ishwara Sarvabhit. For you with your dream, for your imagination, you're sarvajna. You know you're the self of all, and you also know everything in that vritti. It's all known. So for Ishwara, there's the sarvajñatvam, I am the whole, right? Which is the aparoksha, I am the whole. And sarvabhit, every single thing is known. Because there is nothing that's away from sattva. Nothing away from rajas, nothing away from tamas. So if there's no identification, if there's no sukshma sharira, subtle body, and that causes identification with a nama, with a tamas, if there's no such subtle body, then you are just you're omniscient because of the sattva. You see.
It's pretty amazing.
It's amazing.
And so the jagat and the virat, how do they differ now?
Well, jagat, if we're talking about jagat, that which is, and we're using it as that which is manifest, is known through sense perception, that's the jagat, and that's virat. Right? That which is known through the sense perception means this physical world that comes into being and goes out of being. That's what we mean by virat. That's what they mean by adibhutam here in the first.
So what's known through the senses is virat. And how do you translate jagat now?
Jagat just means the world, the universe.
Oh,
so jagat can have jagat can mean the whole creation and include subtle and gross. So if we're using jagat just to mean the physical creation, and by physical creation, we mean that which can be perceived through sense perception. And that's what they mean in the verse here by adibhutam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they mean by virat. I'm bringing virat in.
Great. Can I ask one quick question? The shariras, the different...
Sharira? The stula sharira,
yeah,
the physical body.
Yeah, the different ones, right? They're like eight or something. And they're the different layers.
No, there's three.
Different sheets.
Oh, okay, there's three shariras. Stula sharira, physical body. Sukshma sharira, subtle body.
Okay.
Karana sharira, causal body. Then there's five sheaths. The anamaya kosha. The kosha made of food, that is the stula sharira. The stula sharira is the anamaya kosha, the food sheath. Then there's the pranamaya kosha, vital force, right? Manomaya kosha, the mental sheath, the jnanamaya kosha, the buddhi. Okay? These three make up the sukshma sharira. Pranamaya kosha, manamaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha are the sukshma sharira, these three together. Then the karana sharira is the anandamaya kosha. So we've got stula sharira and anamaya kosha, and karana sharira and anandamaya kosha. They're equivalent, they're the same. Then we have sukha sharira, which is the pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha together.
You guys got it.
Put these terms together tonight in a way I haven't heard you do it before. It's really great. The Chirabhasa,
yeah.
Hiranyagarbha, the Devatas, and Satyam. And
yeah.
Thanks so much.
The Satyam Nitya.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Satyam as one of the gurus.
Oh, Satwa. Yes, Satwa. Yeah. Yeah, it's bringing a lot of things together in a kind of vision. Nice.